Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong since 1982 and continues every Sunday night at 8 p.m. As I always begin these, I want to remind you of a few little bits and pieces of information. If you cannot get on the net proper, and have a question or a topic you would like addressed or would like to offer me a puzzle, because I love to play little puzzles on this. The email address that you can reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. There will be links available on my link page if you want to look at them now. Don't look at them too strongly, but they're available at roy.ac2gs.com regarding some puzzle for next week and some other information as time goes. For anyone interested, so you can either go. Also, there is an audio stream, so if you have any friends who can't get onto EchoLink or don't have a radio, they could just type into their browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give them an audio feed. There's presently four people on it. And as always, Mike KC2NJI has his archive of the TechNet going as far back as September of 2006, so that's available to you. Let me drop for a second, and we will continue. The plan for tonight is I will ask if anyone has any questions or topics or statements to make of a technical nature, and I'll ask them to give me their first name and their call sign. Somewhere between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, Andy, WA2CDL, will bring us this episode of Andy's Corner. Then when that's done, I will come back and entertain any other questions the audience might have, and we'll open it to just about anything, COVID-19, physics, geology, what have you. And then around 10:15, Paul WS2N will come in with the space report. So that's the plan for tonight. I will start it by asking if anyone has any questions of a technical nature, or topics, or comments that they'd like to make. Please give me your first name and your call sign.
It's K2GJE. Just some trivia. Over.
Okay, Ed, I have you down for trivia. Anyone else want to go on the list for tonight? Gosh, it looks like it's going to be a quiet night. I'll ask you one last time. Well, not one last time. I'll ask you again and again as time progresses. But this time, if any of you guys have any questions or topics or comments you'd like to make, give me your first name and your call sign.
This is Rich, W2BZ. If there is time, I'd like to give some thoughts about digital radio. Back to you.
Okay, I have you down, Rich. Anyone else want to put their name down tonight for any questions of a technical nature or any topics or anything related to amateur radio tonight? Okay, I just want to throw out to the audience, unless you've heard it before, and you probably have, those wonderful guys at the FCC are planning to change the rules as far as licensing is involved. They're talking about putting on a $50 renewal fee for amateur radio licenses, and they're calling for responses to that. And I would hope all of you pick up your piece of paper or your typewriter or your word processor and write to the FCC how you feel about being charged $50. But, I digress. Anyone know anything further about this $50, licensing fee the FCC has in mind? Okay, I guess not. I will then go to Ed, K2GJE, with trivia.
This is Ed, K2GJE. I haven't heard anything about a $50 fee. When you took the test at the FCC, there was a fee years ago, and I remember at one time there was a small license renewal fee, but there hasn't been one for a long time. I was searching the internet for a part for one of my boat anchors, and I came across some companies that used to be down on Radio Row, and I don't know if you're interested, if people that maybe still do some building. I came across Barry Electronics, who's still alive. They're on the internet, and Leeds Radio is still alive. They're on the internet. They have a lot of parts for boat anchors, and I guess there's a lot of other people when they go searching. Back to net.
Okay, very good, Ed. Yeah, that there's still a big demand for parts for boat anchors. I mean, a lot of people spent their youth dreaming of owning a Collins, and in their retirement years, they have enough extra money put away to the side where they can make it a reality. So that's good to know. Valley Electronic and Leeds Radio. There are other sources, thankfully. There are our websites that cater to the older radio, new in box from years gone by, and all kinds of bits and pieces. So it's good to hear that the Valley Electronics and Leeds Radio is still around and functioning that way. Yeah, I got a notice a couple of days ago. The FCC apparently is considering changing their rules. They weren't allowed, I think, to charge for changing addresses or other bits and pieces of information, but there was, I think, a loophole where they could charge what have you for relicensing every, to 10 years. So they're actually considering charging us all $50 for that wonderful thing to do. So I'm just hoping that we can kind of whip up an effort of people suggesting to Ajat Rehi that maybe he could, look elsewhere for his money. But we'll see.
Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
I wanted to say that my grandfather, George Modell, had one of the first radio shops on Cortlandt Street in Manhattan, and I mean one of the first, and his partner was Emerson, and they broke up, and my grandfather went on to be a wine salesman, and Emerson went on to be Emerson. Back to you.
So, well, I guess he should have turned right when he turned left.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
Yep. Well, what can you do? Cry about spilt milk. But once again, guys, when you have nothing better to do, if I have a chance later in the TechNet, I'll put up a link to the FCC site. I think it's the ARRL site that cites the FCC notification, so you can spread the word around. Anyway, one more ask. If anyone else out there wants to be put on the list for any questions or topics tonight, give me your first name and your call sign.
The name here is Curtis. The call letters are KC2DAW, what in the net?
Well, thank you very much, Curtis. I assume by that you don't have a question or a topic. You just wanted to tell us you were there.
Yep, thanks. Roger.
Okay, Curtis. Good. Sit back and listen a while, and if any question comes to you, you know where to ask it. Rich, W2BZ, you wanted to talk about DMR.
I just wanted to take a short amount of time and talk about 6 weeks I went from DMR, or digital radio is not ham radio, to I think it's the future of ham radio. And what's happened in the last 6 weeks has been sort of miraculous in that all that I heard about it, where the voices aren't, the same, and the audio quality isn't the same, and everything else, for me anyway, isn't true. And I learned that, especially with DMR, there's a tremendous amount to learn about it. It's not you turn it on and you're on DMR, not even close. Let me let it drop. On the other hand, and I also learned that they're not so bad either. They're not so complicated either, and they're all based on Excel spreadsheet files, and they're pretty easy to learn. So I am no longer, I've been in ham radio for 60 years, I'm no longer looking for DX. I don't care if I'm speaking to somebody from Manila or Japan or whatever. That doesn't thrill me at all. What does thrill me is the old-time CISOs that we used to have way back when. And I'll let it drop again. The reason why I love ham radio is because it's like-minded people talking about like-minded subjects, and it's our hobby. And we love shooting the breeze together about it. And that's what I found with DMR. You could do better than anything, since the height of propagation, whatever year, month, day, or hour that was, is certainly not now. And I think this DMR now is the right product at the right time. We have the COVID keeping people home. We have an aging ham population not really wanting to go out there and put up 100-foot towers anymore or collect QSL cards. So I just think it's the right product for the right time, and I am totally enamored with it. And I love the sound of, I love no QSB, QRM, QRN. I just love the pristine nature of it, even though there are some dropouts once in a while. And if anybody has any questions about DMR or digital radio, and by the way, I learned all this through our host, Roy. He introduced me to all of this. Please let me or Roy know, because it's fascinating. And like I say, I think it's the hobby of, I think it's the future of ham radio. Back to you, Roy, WTBZ.
Okay, very good, Rich. Rich is enamored of DMR. It's a fascinating subject. The different digital voice modes are sort of interesting in and of themselves. And only a few years ago really were hotspots another additional innovation. Using them, you can bypass repeaters and therefore not have to worry that you're taking up too much time on a repeater with your own conversation to other linked repeater sites. So it's sort of like IRLP, except that it brings it down to the individual. So Rich would like to know if any of you guys have any questions about DMR. Maybe he'll be able to help you tonight. So any questions about DMR, please tell us. Okay, doesn't seem to be too many questions, Rich, unfortunately. I guess you gotta pump up the enthusiasm even more with, I don't know. I don't know what percentage of the listeners out there already are doing it, so they don't have any questions, or they don't quite know what it is, so they don't have any particular questions that way. So it's difficult to gauge.
Is it possible to take a real quick survey just by saying how many people are on digital radio, ham radio, DMR or otherwise? Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, if you want to get a sense for that, it's a little bit not what was ever done with the TechNet. You know, one of the great things I liked about Dick's presentation of the TechNet was that we don't really take the general check-ins. But for the sake of this exercise and learning something, we'll go down the different lists, and if anyone would like to volunteer that their experiences, whether if they are using a digital voice, especially DMR, especially hotspots, say a couple of words or just hear and move on. So we'll start at the very beginning. We'll all call signs that begin with A. Anyone working digital digital voice and would like to say one thing or another? Okay, call signs beginning with K. If you have anything to say about digital modes, interest, curiosity in, or experiences you had, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, what have you, so call signs to begin with K.
For two Alpha Alpha Bob, question. John, Juliet Ocean Hotel, November.
Yeah, certainly. What's your question, Don?
Good evening. Here in Southwest Florida. My question is, with a DMR radio, does it allow you to get into local receivers, being like Lime Mark up in New York, or J-Stars down in South Jersey, or wrong? Digital radio is a separate entity. They have their own, I'm going to say repeaters, that's probably not the right term, because I hear a DMR goes, and that may be the wrong thing. They're supposed to a satellite, then comes back to Earth. So I'm not really sure. I've seen some advertisements of DMR radios. My question, my interest is, if I get it for DMR radio, can I talk to friends up in New Jersey or friends in Long Island? DMR is not what I'm looking for, is not my answer, so to speak, that's useful.
Okay, John, very good. You want, Rich, do you want to answer it or you want me to answer it? Certainly. And John, welcome aboard Echolink. I realize that it's not that easy to be heard on Echolink. We have to remember to let that push-to-talk button relax for more than 2 seconds, so we'll keep that in mind, John. DMR is not doesn't really work through, say, satellites. DMR operates either locally with a local repeater to a handy talkie or a mobile, but it is networked in a way that that regular repeaters are networked through IRLP. Our LIMARC repeater is hooked up to other IRLP nodes. Very often places in Ontario, Canada, and California, and Los Alamos listen to the technical net through the IRLP. DMR works mostly through Internet Protocol packets. It uses different types of connections called talk groups, and it sends the digital packets through the Internet, where it can be received either by repeaters and heard by people listening to the repeater, or it can be directly sent to a hotspot in your own home that then kind of communicates as a mini repeater using your handy talkie or mobile as the primary radio that's operating it. So you could not use DMR to talk to regular analog repeaters as you can with IRLP, but you can use it to talk to other people who are either on a DMR repeater. If you are in the same talk group, if you go talk group 91 is worldwide, and if your repeater is on talk group 91 and your friend in another state is on a DMR repeater that is connected to talk group 91, then you can talk to them. So as long as you stay in the DMR world, you can talk to all your friends. The problem is jumping from DMR to an FM analog signal. That usually doesn't happen.
Trying to ask you, here's what
Mymark does have a DMR repeater located in Plainview, and there's another one located in Selden. There is also access to these repeaters via hotspots on, I think it's talk group 31662. I think that's the talk group. Also, an interesting thing about DMR is that there are gateways so that, for example, on Thursday night, I participate in a net. Some of the people on the net are on DMR. Some people are entering it through System Fusion. So that's just another thing that you can do with linking all of these digital modes.
AC2GS. Thank you very much, Ken. Yes, as Ken said, Limark has a DMR repeaters and has a talk group dedicated to those transmissions. So theoretically, if you had a DMR radio, you could either link to it from a nearby DMR repeater or through a hotspot. You could access its talk group. You'll listen to the conversation of people on DMR, though. It's not linked to the analog Limark repeaters. So the 70-centimeter analog and Selden and here in Glen Oaks is not linked to it, so you would not get the audio transmission. Digital Limark talk group is alive and well and operating and easily accessible.
Okay, thank you for that information. That's good news. That's good news. That's kind of bust me up. Because if Limark's doing it, it'd be only a matter of time other repeaters jump aboard radio club, so to speak. You could tell I'm a Floridian now, but my heart's up in New Jersey. Back to you. King Bravo 2 up with Alpha Bomb.
Very good, John. Well, as you know, there's a lot of guys down there, down south with you, who come from New York and New Jersey, and, you know, like the old saying goes, you can take the guy out of New Jersey or New York, but you can't take New York or New Jersey out of the guy. So DMR is very, very popular. There's a few reasons for it. One is that there were a lot of good sales on used Motorola repeater devices, so people stocked up and set up their own little DMR. And of course, the Chinese manufacture many, 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 many radios that are capable of DMR, and they're very cost effective. And you put them together with a hotspot, and the world is your oyster. So, you know, DMR is a nice technology. It does, as Rich will tell you, open the door to communicating all around the world. It has its own pluses and minuses like most things. So I think that DMR will continue to grow for the foreseeable future until, you know, there's bound to be another brand new shiny thing, and then some people will move on to that. But I hope this information helped you, John.
And we'll keep monitoring on it, and we'll see what we can do with it. Back to net control. I don't want to tie up the net. That's too much of your guys' time. King Bravo 2 up and up. Great job.
Okay, very good, John. So we were kind of going down through the call sign list. If anyone wanted to say if they had any good things to say or bad things to say, or questions to add or answers to add. So we were in the zone of people with call signs that begin with K. So anyone with either questions or comments about digital voice mode and DMR in particular, please let loose.
K-E-2-QR.
Yes, Fred.
That last piece of Oreo cookie didn't go down so well. But if John's still out there, I see he's in, on the west coast of Florida. I do know on the east coast of Florida, in the communities, I think you can start at the northernmost tip of Florida and go to all the repeaters down there. I mean, there are many DMR repeaters, and a lot of those guys are talking to their friends who live in New Jersey and New York. There's a talk group that Ken probably knows better than I, because I haven't been on maybe in 6 months, but I've been on DMR. And there's a call group that was set up that was kind of like a connection between New York and the east coast of Florida, because everybody goes down there during the winter and they want to speak to their friends. And 2ION takes his trip down to Florida, and he loads up his code plug and he talks to people up and down the coast as he's traveling. I have no idea what's going on the west coast of Florida, but I would assume it might be the same. Back to that.
Well, I hope so for John's part. I get the feeling that he's the way he's saying that he lives in a community that doesn't have a lot of activity. You know, I mean, there might be repeaters out there, but as I'm sure you know, a lot of repeaters are just sitting there taking up space. It's rather sad to take a look at the repeater list and figure out what percentage of those repeaters are getting more than, say, about 5% duty cycle a week. You know, I mean, we're kind of spoiled by our repeater here. It's almost always busy through the day and then shut down at night, but there is a lot of repeaters out there that you can't even tell if they're working unless you kind of hit them and listen to their response.
Question, KD2OGB Mobile.
Yes, Greg.
Some repeaters that I've listened to, they're just sitting there and not one person is on it for the entire day. And one of them is Beaconic, 146A2. That was my first repeater that I started listening to with a friend of mine, but I just don't seem to hear many people on it. But is it that most repeaters half the time just sit there and nobody even uses them?
Greg, I wish it was only half the time. Like I said, there are a whole bunch of stations out there, because I tried that when I first got my license, and I listened, you know, and I recorded stuff, so I could tell that there was nothing happening day in and day out. There's a lot of repeaters like that. Some of them are rather curiously set up to only transmit and not receive, because they're linked to other repeaters, and the guy running them just found it was easier to configure it that way. There's a lot of curious repeaters out there that don't seem to get much traffic. It's a shame. I think it's kind of after the fact of, you know, 20 years ago, people didn't have cell phones, so they were able to get phone calls through repeaters. It was very, very popular, and then the cell phone was made economical, and everyone's moved on to those. So there's a lot of repeaters out there. People almost never retire their repeaters. They just leave them, and if they break, eventually they fix them. Sometimes not. Repeaters that are actually active, and, you know, if you look at repeater lists, there's probably something like 80, 90, 100 repeaters in this local area. But if you listen, there's only really about 6 or 7 that really talk much on them.
Roy, this is Rich. Could you explain the difference between a hotspot and a repeater?
Sure, Rich. Basically, a hotspot is really, I like to think of it as a personal repeater. It is a way, you hook it up to your internet provider, and so it maintains the packet control through the internet. You use your handy talkie or your mobile to communicate to the hotspot. It picks up usually 70 centimeter is most of the designs. It takes the packets, throws them into the internet, and sends them to guys on the other side. The guys on the other side could either be a bridge with a repeater that then transmits to the local area, or it could be another person's personal hotspot that just decodes it and transmits it very locally to that person's handy talkie or mobile radio. So ultimately, the best way I find to explain a hotspot is it's your own personal little repeater.
So in other words, in terms of digital communication, repeaters are, I would think, maybe on their way out. Not analog like we're on now, but digital. Would you agree with that?
I get the sense of what will probably happen is it will become a very, very narrow niche selection. Rather than people opening their control devices so that you can get through to any talk group, I think what will inevitably happen is people will use the local time slot as a local repeater, and in some cases send those packets out to distant people who want to listen to the local traffic. And then probably on the network time slot, they'll select a talk group that they really like and dedicate that. That's how I see it happening. I don't think it's going to end the idea of DMR repeaters. I just think it will narrow the cast of the long-range networking option over time.
Ed Hushin.
Yes, Wesley.
I think audience would be interested if you go with short explanation of IRLP node and how they can order, what is it, and how it's run. The tip is if you go to IRIP.net, again, IRLP.net, immediately the page opens up with all of the hardware. Go ahead.
Okay, Wesley. IRLP is just the initials for Internet Radio Linking Project. It was designed around the concept of linking analog FM radios across the world. They arrange connections and protocols. It's done, again, through Internet access, and each reflector has its own node number. The Selden repeater has its own node that people link to it from, as I said, Ontario and California and such, and the sits back into audio and triggers their analog FM repeater to transmit it. So suddenly, you know, Ontario's repeater is sounding identical to Glen Oak. That's in a very short term. It is sometimes a little cumbersome to do the links. Usually you have to do it with the approval of the people in control of the repeaters. And in addition to the node, there is usually a couple of digits required. People can't just open up and link IRLPs together. So if you're friendly with the net control operator for a repeater who has IRLP, you could ask him what the magic number is and arrange for approval to link to different repeaters for different purposes as over the days and weeks and months.
Yeah, I would like that too.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm aware, LimeWire doesn't really go into linking to other repeaters that much. It's more the other way around. Thankfully, I don't keep an eye on how often these IRLPs are established, these links. But I know for the technical net, ever since I was aware of the technical net and of IRLP, I've been watching and seeing interesting places link up to us. So it's sort of a one-way thing at this point, but you know, the powers that be are amenable to linking if people have a good reason that there's some kind of a net or some activity that would be beneficial to link to those repeaters.
Yeah, question. Can you have node operated without repeater?
2, well, to a degree, yes. I think this is not something that you regularly want to tell the people who basically manage it, because I get the sense that they're really obsessive compulsive about this. They really want it to be a repeater linked device. They do not want personal links. I have heard stories that people have sort of set up their own repeater/IRLP links, in which it's not a real open repeater. It's a more of a personal repeater, but it's enough of a repeater to get the approval of the people running it. So on a theoretical basis, they would rather not. They want all these things to be linked directly to repeaters.
A few more things. For those who want to have their own personal node, actually that would be node that is established with agreement of IRLP. There is a very inexpensive version of the hardware, which is PRLP4, which costs only $249.99, and you can buy it from IRLP or by contacting David Cameron VE7LTD, which is IRLP, who is IRLP designer. And that is a very small unit and compact that is using a IRLP and is based on Linux or Debian, which is a small piece of program. It's extremely small one computer. They also have it built on Raspberry Pi, a computer. So it's really nice, ladies and gentlemen. So it contains everything: full repeater controller, full Debian, Raspbian, full Raspberry Pi, Linux pre-installed, and runs full version of Debian program, supported programs. The more expensive version is the NG embedded code, which is much bigger box, and this one is $689.99. You can also have a very inexpensive node exactly working similar way, which is just one board, which is $109.99, and that is based on Raspberry Pi. So for those who wants to do it, you can buy it from IRLP, and you're going to get the cables.
Wesley, yes, David Cameron's call sign, for anyone interested, is VE7LTD. He's a Canadian amateur radio operator, and they call those things the IRLP repeater builder kit, such. And it's doable. I think John, KC2SHO, communicates to us through a node similar to that. It's not really as active, as far as I'm aware, as people who use Echolink, which is very easy to run. It runs on PCs, it runs on Android, it runs on Apple devices, and especially nowadays hotspots. Depending upon how many little bits and pieces of you want to buy separate and put it all together, you could probably put together a very workable hotspot for $100, give or take. So there's a lot of different ways of doing it. It depends on what you want to link to. Linking it on IRLP is pretty much locking you into the analog world, because I think they frown upon links to digital. And the hotspot links you into digital, because I don't think they particularly are that motivated to hook you up to analog. So you figure out which side of the border you're supposed to be on, and you can play with those things.
My hotspot hotspot costs $105, and my Anytone 868 transceiver, which is a UHF, VHF, analog, and digital transceiver, was $158. So for $258, you're on both analog and digital, VHF and UHF. That's a pretty good buy, I think, compared to what we're used to in ham radio. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it is. You know, like all things, it depends upon what you want and where you're located. It gives you a little bit of a chance at both worlds, so that's always good.
It seems like in the PMR world that Anytone, it has taken over the field. 90% of the guys that I hear on DMR using Anytone 878. So if you want to look at the hottest radio for DMR, I would say it's the Anytone 878. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Anytone is a very popular radio. For a monobander, the MD380 is a very popular one. Kinect Systems is always selling all kinds of things. I have a CS800 mobile that they're still selling, although right now they have a 800D that's a dual-band mobile that, you know, obviously gives you both bands. So there's a lot of options out there. So let me just ask if anyone else has any questions or comments about the digital mode tonight before we move on to Andy's Corner.
WB2KWC?
Yes, Cap.
One of the things I really enjoy about it is I can be on a handheld and I'm checked into a net with other stations, you know, all around the world from, you know, Europe and South America and all over the place. I think it took me a while to figure, you know, how it was put together, but once I mastered the concept of defining talk groups and putting the talk groups into channels to connect them to repeaters, hotspots, and other users, and then putting the channels into zones to group them on your radio, suddenly code plugs made sense. And when we talked about the future, and I'm guessing, I don't know, what will be the new technology of commercial radio, and ham radio will either lead it in the development and then benefit from the surplus equipment that's been obsoleted from the commercial industry.
Well, Ken, you know, it's difficult to know. I mean, if you ever, and I was a big fan of Popular Science when they published monthly. Now it's, I think, twice a year or something terrible like that. They used to foretell the future, and they always got it wrong because it's almost impossible to know what new technology is going to be coming up out of nowhere or the price plummets. I have been reading for at least 7-8 years of something called cognitive radio, which takes radio out of the venue as much of the modes and frequencies and more into the end product of who you want to talk to. So it's basically sort of a concept of a directory of users that you log into. You say, I would like to talk to Ken WB2KWC. They look up in their directory where you last put your digital ID on, the frequency, the talk group, the mode, and switches the radio over to that and generates the CQ. So that might be the next new shiny thing. Who knows?
That sounds like basically taking some intelligence to them.
Yeah, it requires another with a few shifts of a bit. But it's all possible. It's all being written about, it's probably stuff that's being used in the military because it happened with software-defined radios. I used to talk to Dick about my Flex radio, and up until about 5 years from its development, you couldn't afford the chipset. You know, you would need a defense a budget to pay for the silicon that went into these things. But thankfully, silicon gets cheaper over time. But even when I bought mine, I think the field programmable gate arrays cost something like $1,000 in small numbers. But the prices will go down for all these things, and so I don't think it's pie in the sky. I think it's possible. Question is, will people with their little clipboards tell you that this isn't really amateur radio, even though it's going through RF because it's kind of set up through an internet protocol, the contact information. But we'll see what happens.
Enter Adrian. I think it would be nice if you end up this conversation with a few words about echolink.
Okay, Wes. Echolink is a very nice thing. We kind of talked about it at least a couple of weeks ago. I think Craig OGB was talking about how he enjoyed using it and found that it gives him better access. It has good points, it has bad points. It was Echolink was the first mode that I transmitted on. When I first got my license, I didn't even have a handy talkie. I had an iPhone. I got a password to use Echolink. I logged on to Glen Oaks, the repeater, and I talked to Alex in Romania via his Echolink connection to the repeater as well. It has nice features. It is also an internet protocol device. It is designed much more for individuals than repeaters. You can link it to a repeater. You can link it to a group called a conference and collect people through that method. And then you could have individual connections as well. Limark has an Echo Link. We now have about 8 or 9 people hooked in. They're listening to the audio stream. They can type text at the bottom. And if we don't let it drop long enough, they can't kind of get into it because the Echolink will not accept the connection until other connections have been dropped for a certain time period. Okay, so I think we wrapped up most of that, and I'll be back again. I have a puzzle question for you people. Also, I have a link to a very interesting YouTube that none of us will understand because the gentleman apparently is Ukrainian, and it's all written, I guess, in Russian. It's Cyrillic. But nevertheless, it's an interesting discuss it, and there's a puzzle that's not related to that YouTube, but we'll talk all about that. But now let me summon from his corner Andy, WA2CDL, technician par excellence, for another rendition of Andy's Corner.
Okay, Roy, thank you. And good evening to everyone listening. Yes, nice discussion. I will say that, and Dick has mentioned it many times, there are how many aspects of this hobby? And that's the beauty of this, is that it tailors everyone's interest many different ways, depending on what you're into, or what you're not into, or what you want to be into. And it's really, you know, to this day, it's still a fascinating hobby to me, and still gets more fascinating over time. Just a little bit of history. One of the reasons why I got my license is out of curiosity of how things work, and I'm still curious, even though I can't keep up with the technology anymore. But also, I like to build. I guess it's static on the review. I don't think that's me. I like to build things, and I just finished a project that made me cloud because it was taking an existing transmitter and modifying it to do what I wanted it to do, and that was incorporating incorporating a power supply into it, a small power supply to operate a relay, and the relay taking the place. So I completed that, and it works. It works to my own specification, and it's an accomplishment. When you take something and you you know, change it around, and that's one of the reasons why I like this hobby, is I have a chance to experiment, explore, and learn. I'm wondering if that's my radio making the static. Let me just let it drop a second. All right, I don't see anything here that's obvious, but it's funny, I didn't hear it on anyone else. I'm going to have to look into that. I didn't hear the static this morning. Anyway, all right, getting into the subject at hand. We've been talking about for the past few weeks coaxial cables and what they're made of, what their losses, how they work, and impedance of coax cables and voltage cone relationships and some basic formulas going with that. And of course, I hope I have a listening audience that was listening last week that we can continue this subject. This is the reason why I'm doing this, just to reiterate. There's an article in the QST magazine, November 2019, written by Ward Silver, N0AX, and it's about impedance matching with transmission lines. And I found that to be really interesting how you can do that. But I figured that before we get into that discussion of matching impedances, people want to know what a transmission line is and how that works, what it does, and so on. So I got into this discussion of coaxial cables and other means of transferring energy from your transmitter to your antenna. There's coax cable, there's open wire line, shielded two wire, and so on. So I've been discussing a velocity factor for the past week or so, and that was an interesting discussion of what that is. And basically, the whole discussion was talking about transmission lines that are matched to their own characteristic impedance. And I just dropped my book here, so let me get to the right page. So we were talking about load impedances of the transmission lines that we were talking about, and let's say a 50-ohm line has a 50-ohm termination to it, and what the waveform looks like, the sine wave, and what occurs in the transmission line at various points along the line. But today's discussion is going to be even more interesting for people who are interested.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, I got to remember the timeout also, so please remind me of the timeout. So today's discussion will be on lines, transmission lines, that have unmatched loads to them. Unmatched loads, which is going to cause what's known as SWR, and the formation of standing waves. I want to try something here because the static is bothering me. Roy, do me a favor. Can you transmit for me for 5 seconds?
Okay, this is AC2GS counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Key up again, but don't talk for 5 seconds. All right, well, you're not that strong into the repeater, but I don't hear the static. I just want to make sure it's not coming from me, because I can't see any, I don't see any change over here. But it's just annoying to listen to. All right. Because we had this last week also. And I know it's not windy out, to my knowledge. All right, well, we'll see. We'll see how time goes on here. So let me just let it drop. And we're going to have a discussion on lines, transmission lines with unmatched loads. And we're going to talk about the formation of standing waves, what a standing wave is, how it propagates along the line, along the transmission line. In this particular case, it's coax cable. And some of the formulas, as maybe some people know, what, you know, how to compute an SWR, given your forward and reflected powers. There's different terms. SWR is an interesting topic, and there's quite a few pages in regarding to this. So I got about an hour or so till 10 o'clock, so let's see if we can talk about this. All right, so let me let it drop. Any questions, by the way, up to this point? Any questions? W86CDO.
KD2FIU, Andy, Roy is coming in perfectly clear on the input.
Yeah, but I'm listening to the output.
Yes, and they're static. So just want to help with that. I'll be listening. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I hear something also, but you're, depending on the strength of the signal, maybe my signal is not that strong because of my antenna system. All right. Thanks, George. All right. So this is going to be lines with unmatched loads. All right, so here we go. The transmission line is absorbed by the load. The energy that is not absorbed has only one way to flow, and that is back up the transmission line in the direction of the generator. Okay, this is referred to as a reflection. I mean, of course, everybody's heard about reflections. With a reflection present, the input impedance changes with changes in the length of the line. Okay, now that's important to know. So the input impedance changes with changes in the length of the line. Now the length becomes critical. Which, by the way, parallels the original reason why I went to this discussion in this particular book. It's because it's about impedance matching with transmission lines. And these are transmission lines with different impedances that are connected together to match a certain impedance. So it's for that reason that we, you know, for this particular phenomenon that occurs is why we can use transmission lines to match impedances. So with a reflection present, the input impedance changes with changes in the length of the line. If the termination is an open or short circuit, all the energy coming down the line is reflected back up the line because, in effect, there is no... In an open circuit line, for example, the end of the line is a high impedance. The abrupt impedance change on the line will cause the signal energy to travel along the line in the opposite direction. By the way, I'm reading this word by word because it's easy. It's pretty easy to understand this so far. All right, so in doing so, let's see, or in this case, in so doing, the reflected signal adds...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Oh, do I hate that timeout. So in doing so, the reflected wave, the reflected signal, adds to and subtracts from the direct wave coming down the line from the generator. Consequently, the signal on the transmission line is the algebraic sum of the direct and reflected waves. Now, of course, you know, unfortunately, guys and gals, you got to use visualization to see what I'm talking about. I can't bring this book onto the front of the microphone to show you the pictures. So, but it's there. Okay. So consequently, the signal on the transmission line is the algebraic sum of the direct and reflected waves. This causes standing waves of both voltage and current on the transmission line. When the transmission line